Sentire Media.
Hello, you. You're listening to A History of Italy, a Sentire Media podcast. Special episode on great women in Italian history, Matilda of Tuscany. Non posso più accucciarmi e così ritorno su. Lascio i colli nelle valli tra due salici piangenti. Io ritrovo la speranza di un amore che ormai fu. The following is a special episode to celebrate A History of Italy becoming a part of the Sentire Media Network. At Sentire, we've made it our mission to craft podcasts that ignite your passions, keep you informed and entertained, and deliver insights to those who have a deep love for the Italian way of life. For more information, go to sentire.media. For you, my dear constant listener, this first episode is a chance to go back and visit with our old friend, Matilda of Tuscany, Countess of Canossa. For you, my new friend and listener, come and discover the fascinating life of an overlooked yet very important woman in Italian history. I hope you enjoy the episode. Let's imagine that you wish to visit Italy, northern Italy in particular. Let's also imagine that you are courageous or crazy enough to want to rent a car and brave the jungle that is the Italian motorway. You're driving from Milan south towards Bologna. As you make your way down, sticking to the right-hand lane in terror, at a certain point you see a sign for a motorway exit, Terre di Canossa, the lands of Canossa. You go past the exit and next you see a very impressive Santiago Calatrava bridge over the motorway and take that exit to the city of Reggio Emilia. In this town, you can find a school by the name of Matilde di Canossa. With the same name, you can also find a golf club, a hotel, a restaurant, roads, a square, trails, and if you look a bit further away, even a French racehorse. What is so special about this Lady Matilda of Canossa to warrant her name being used for so many things over 900 years after her death? Well, if it had not been for the fact that at the time when she lived, there was an emperor who officially ruled over northern Italy, perhaps she would have been called a queen. As it was, she was the Margravine of Tuscany, Countess of Canossa, ruling lands that stretch from the confines of Rome up almost to the confines of Italy. We don't need to start off by going all the way back to her 11th century to meet her. Indeed, it was 1644 when her body was exhumed and found to be more or less intact, with flesh still on it. Straight, regular, very white teeth and red hair. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Matilda was a redhead. The parents of Matilda, who was born in 1046, were Beatrix of Lorraine and Bonifacio Atto of Canossa, perhaps the most powerful noble after the emperor himself. The relationship between the Canossa and the empire that had been the foundation of their great fortune had started to sour with Emperor Henry III, and indeed the latter was one of the suspects when Bonifacio was killed, possibly by a poisoned arrow, in the year 1052. Beatrice was left alone with her three children, Matilda the youngest, Federico the oldest and heir of Bonifacio, and Beatrice Jr. Federico and Beatrice Jr. died in the same year, 1055. This was not unheard of in those times, but strange enough for rumors to circulate and the blame to be put once again on the emperor. It seems that Matilda was accumulating reasons to bear a grudge towards the empire. Beatrice now had to look around for a friend or ally. It was at that point in 1054 that she married Godfrey of Lorraine, known as the Bearded, one supposed because he had quite a magnificent beard. Godfrey, like Beatrice, was a vassal of Emperor Henry III, who had rebelled against his overlord, and Beatrice was suspect at best. Both the bride and the groom brought children from previous marriages to the deal, and so to consolidate the union in the future, they decided to betroth two of their children. Thus, at the age of 8, Matilda was now promised to Godfrey the Hunchbacked. Godfrey the Bearded, meanwhile, stepped in the role of man of the family and started to consolidate and expand his new lands. Godfrey's activities worried the Pope, who appealed to the Emperor, who made his way down, sending Godfrey scampering back to Lorraine and having Beatrice and Matilda made prisoners. However, they weren't chucked into a moldy dungeon somewhere. After all, they were noble prisoners, and Beatrice was a first cousin to the Emperor. It is here, therefore, that Matilda continued to be educated at court, learning languages, including German. This captivity did not last long. In the year 1056, Henry III died. Feeling that his time was near, he released the two women and got them and Godfrey to swear allegiance to his 6-year-old son, also called Henry, Henry IV. The marriage between Beatrice and Godfrey lasted until 1069, when the latter died. Just before his death, he had called his wife and stepdaughter to him in Lorraine, hoping to seal the marriage between Matilda and his son, Godfrey. So, Matilda stayed and her mother, once again a widow, returned to Italy. Matilda was alone, far from home, surrounded by strangers, and with a husband that she most likely found repulsive. But she stayed and did her duty. That is a word that could easily be used to characterize the life of Matilda of Canossa, duty. She became pregnant with a daughter, to whom she gave birth in 1070, but the baby soon died. At that point, she could bear it no longer. Alone, having lost a child, she made her way back to Italy and her mother. The year was 1071 by now, and just 2 years later, we can introduce the third of the great characters in our story after Matilda and Henry IV, and that is Ildebrando di Soana, a monk who became pope with the name of Gregory VII. He embarked upon a radical church reform campaign, which would inevitably bring him on a collision course with the emperor. This was because one of the bees that Gregory had in his bonnet was the fact that the emperor was happily galumping around investing bishops, nominating them, and giving them loads of lands and privileges. This in exchange for a nice pile of cash. Gregory claimed that only the Pope had this right. That brought him into contrast with the emperor, and in the famous year of 1075, we see the deposition of the Pope by the emperor and the excommunication of the latter by the former. In all of this, Matilda supported the papacy. This came at a great cost for her, since the close proximity to the Pope of an unmarried woman gave their enemies all kinds of ammunition to discredit them. The year 1076 was a game changer for Matilda. Her marriage ended quite dramatically and suddenly when Godfrey of Lorraine, known as the Hunchback, was killed as he sat down on the toilet by having a dagger or sword shoved up his, well, the place you use when you go to the toilet. Even worse for Matilda was the death of her beloved mother, her only remaining family, in April at the age of 57. That winter, between 1076 and 1077, was one of the coldest in living memory. It was during this cold winter that the humiliation of Canossa occurred. Henry IV, due to his excommunication, had lost the support of many of his nobles and had been forced to accept to attend a council in Augsburg. However, as the Pope was making his way up to the council, Henry headed him off, and when the Pope retreated to Matilda's fortress of Canossa, Henry went to him in penitent robes, barefoot, freezing in the snow for 3 days and nights. In the end, the Pope, the leader of the Christian church at the time, was forced to take in a penitent Christian, Although he had indeed suffered a humiliation, and I suspect a bit of frostbite, Henry had performed a diplomatic and propaganda masterstroke. Meanwhile, Henry continued to do as he pleased, investing the bishops, imprisoning bishops that disagreed with him, and so on. The contrast resumed. Matilda had no real obligation towards the church, and in truth, it would have been far more convenient for her to be a loyal vassal to the emperor. But she had made her choice, and she stuck to it with determination. The cost to Matilda for this choice was war. It was not actually the emperor, but an army of northern Italian bishop counts who struck the first blow on October 15th, when their army defeated that of the Countess Matilda at the Battle of Volta Mantovana and sent them fleeing for the hills. We cannot say that Matilda was ever in the thick of battle, waving a sword, but she was a hands-on military commander. At this point, Matilda of Canossa, now 35 years of age, after reigning over much of northern Italy, was reduced to a few castles in the Reggio Emilia Apennines. She was in no position to help Pope Gregory, who by this time was under siege from the emperor. The best she could do was to collect the precious objects from some of her churches and monasteries and melt them down. It was all to no avail. In 1083, Henry was able to enter Rome and take control of part of the city. He could now finally have a coronation, which he did, in San Giovanni Laterano on the 31st of March 1084, at the hands of an anti-pope he had whipped up, Clement III. He didn't bother hanging around too long because the real Pope Gregory had called the Normans to his aid and they were coming. As Henry made his way back up north, he thought he would have another go at Matilda, and he laid siege to the castle of Sorbara in the present-day province of Modena, which was part of her holdings. Legend would have it that the imperial troops, as they settled in for the siege of the castle, found some barrels of high-quality Lambrusco wine that Matilda had accidentally, air quotes, let drop. With the imperials well into their wine and sleeping off the hangover, Matilda, along with soldiers from one of her allied cities, Bologna, attacked in the night. Matilda from the south and the Bolognese from the east. Thanks to the element of surprise, they gained a great victory. The great news of the Battle of Sorbara, which had occurred on the 2nd of July, 1084, was not enough to lift the Pope out of the state in which he now found himself, in exile in Salerno with the Normans after they had sacked Rome and the Romans had blamed the Pope for letting them in. Pope Gregory VII died in exile on the 25th of May, 1084. Matilda had lost another ally, another mentor, another friend. Meanwhile, she spent some time in Rome, trying to get a new pope, Victor III, on the throne, who kept trying to get away, and in the end decided it was better to die than be dragged back to Rome again. With the end of the 1080s, Henry was ready to head back down into Italy. He headed to Mantova, the city where Matilda had been born and that had been her father's capital. In what she saw as a great betrayal, Mantova sided with Henry. The loss of the city showed one of the Countess's flaws, namely her inability to understand the new nature of Italian politics, the decline of the feudal system and the rise of the city-states. After the winter, Henry took the offensive again and took hold of the areas of Bologna and Modena, and he laid siege to the important castle of Monteveglio. This was Matilda's darkest hour. A meeting was held in her castle of Carpineti to consider offering peace terms to Henry, when a monk, a hermit monk from the small alpine village of Marola, spoke up. I wasn't able to find what he actually said, but evidently it was convincing enough to persuade everyone to continue with the fight. The choice almost immediately seemed to be the right one when Henry gave up the siege of Monteveglio. What's more, the continued hit-and-run tactics of Matilda's forces ground down Henry's troops. In the end, he was able to pin her down and make her commit to a pitched battle in an uninhabited valley that came to be known as the Madonna della Battaglia, the Madonna of the Battle. Now, the area where the action took place is known for various things. Good food, terrible if you have cholesterol problems, but great taste. Parmigiano Reggiano cheese, Lambrusco wine, and fog. Lots and lots of fog. On October of 1092, when an abbot, Giovanni, brought a group of monks and priests together to have a good hard pray, a fog did indeed fall on the battlefield, allowing a great victory for the troops of Matilda. This was a great moment for Our Lady, and although Henry remained in Italy for another 5 years, he no longer seemed able to seriously threaten her. Indeed, the tide was really turning. He finally left Italy in 1097, and Matilda was free to take back her considerable lands and consolidate them. The start of the 12th century saw a lull in the struggle against the empire, at least in terms of actual fighting. We know that another son of Henry, also called Henry, rebelled against his father and ended up becoming king of Germany as Henry V, but no German army came to Italy until 1110. In that time, our countess continued on as usual, administering justice, making donations, keeping the peace with brigands and pirates, and dealing with the ever-increasing drive for the independence of the Italian cities. The investiture controversy came knocking again in 1110 as Henry V came down with an army. However, this time around, the new emperor sent a delegation to her and they were able to smooth things out. Let bygones be bygones and so on. Matilda was once again officially reintegrated into her holdings and considered a loyal vassal of the empire. She had had enough of fighting against huge odds, and she really saw the peace between the empire and the papacy as the way forward in Europe. In the autumn of 1114, the gout from which she had always suffered became more and more painful. She made her way to the peace and quiet to the small village of Bondenazzo between Reggio Emilia and Mantua. Finally, in July of 1115, the Bishop of Reggio Emilia had her kiss the crucifix and she lay back and died. With the death of Matilda, we say goodbye to the last of the three great protagonists of the start of the investiture controversy, after Gregory VII in 1085 and Henry IV in 1106. Like Gregory and Henry, she died with no family members around her. However, unlike the other two, she did not die in exile with a sense of failure, but in her own lands, over which she had firm control and in the place of her choice. What's more, she died with the certainty that she had always done her duty, to the very end. She had ruled for over 40 years, almost completely alone, daring to be a woman of power, without a man, at a time when women were supposed to be content with being wives and mothers. A History of Italy podcast is a production of Sentire Media, created and hosted by me, Mike Corradi. Production by my wonderful Patreon supporters. Follow A History of Italy wherever you get your podcasts and go to the website at ahistoryofitaly.com where you can become a Patreon supporter and have access to extra content as well as have a look at videos and my section on voice map audio tours of Italian cities. And don't forget, if you loved this episode or found it mildly tolerable, please leave a 5-star rating and review. It's very much appreciated. Thank you once again very much for listening, and until next time, arrivederci.
Sentire Media.
Hey, podcast producers and show hosts. Do you want to join a podcast network that celebrates all things Italian? At Sentire Media, we understand the allure of Italy and its unique culture. Our devoted team of hosts and producers are all driven by their shared passion for Italy. And we work tirelessly to create the best lifestyle podcasts and content that will whisk you away to the very heart of Italy. With us, you can savor the mouth-watering flavors, get lost in the stories from the past, break down the cultural barriers, and truly immerse yourself in the vibrant traditions of this intoxicating country. If you have a great podcast idea or are already in production and would like to join Sentire Media, head over to sentiremedia.com, that's S-E-N-T-I-R-E media.com, and find out how to submit your show.